Hello, and welcome to the latest edition of The Reap Report, Nareit's weekly podcast. I'm your host, Alan Kenny, and we're recording this on November 1st, 2016. Our guests today are Camille Lee and Dominic Catone, who specialize in leadership consulting for Ferguson Partners. We're going to be discussing succession planning at the executive level for REITs. Camille, Dominic, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Alan, for having us. Yeah, we really appreciate it.
So let's start off just by talking about the succession process. What does a good succession process look like for any company, not just REITs maybe? And are there any kind of fundamental precepts that companies should abide by?
Yeah, I think a standard process, and we've kind of seen this across many different industries before, not only in real estate, but in things like financial institutions, oil and gas, pharmaceuticals, is, you know, you really want to understand what's the purpose, where is the organization going, what's the strategy look like, and what's the required leadership that you need to be able to really engage that strategy. And so there's all sorts of different processes that organizations use specifically because they've got different needs or there's different threats in their environment. But standard, what we take a look at is you really need to define and have clarity around the role profile for that individual role that you're looking at. In this case, we'll talk about CEOs. You want to be able to determine what's the CEO of the future? How are the characteristics and skills and experiences of that CEO going to be able to enable the strategy? And at the same time, what do you need from that CEO, right? What are some of the characteristics, and how do you actually assess for some of those characteristics?
Absolutely. Dominic, I think that's a great point. I'd also say that a key characteristic of a successful succession plan includes board involvement and decision-making that's not held just by one individual, likely the CEO, but also by a succession planning committee that's on the board. And we see that this is the most successful because you want a diverse perspective in that decision-making process rather than having it let sit with just one individual, in which you can bring in unconscious biases or other perspectives that may not necessarily align with the strategy of that organization.
I think that's critical, you know, and this, I think, what's the most important thing, especially what we're seeing in REITs, right, is that you need board involvement, and the board needs to be running the show on the succession event and the plan itself. And that, like Camille said, you know, having a succession committee apart from the other committees gives you a chance and opportunity to really focus solely on succession. And then it's an ongoing process that it becomes very much a part of the fabric of the organization from talent management perspective. What Camille and I argue as part of any process is that you need to really have a talent management philosophy or kind of a build your bench gusto in your organization. I think a lot of times what we hear from organizations that struggle with succession planning is that they don't have the right bench, they haven't really thought about how to build the right bench, and at the same time, they don't have practices or policies in place that help to support that bench. And so when we think a little bit about the steps in the process, going back to your original question, you really want to understand, well, how do we actually recognize whether or not we have the right talent in our organization. And so that's why it's critical to not only have kind of internal members of your organization who have kind of the pulse on talent helping to make decisions, but also you get an external perspective from an unbiased consultant who might come in and be able to really assess your internal talent. I think what we've seen really historically throughout REITs is that about 60 to 70% of them will promote from within. And so you have to understand and assess your internal talent and really, really understand who are the right individuals there, right? And what happens if you don't have the right talent in the organization?
Right.
You're going to have to look on the outside, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so oftentimes more individuals probably not really, they'll want to promote from within. Mm-hmm. We've got some folks. But what happens with that, and one of the watch-outs that we say to individuals is, you just don't tap somebody on the shoulder, right? Sometimes you got to really kind of get out there and ask individuals if they're even motivated for the type of role that you want to put them into.
Yes.
whether or not they've got that drive themselves to actually be the CEO. Yes, of a business?
Absolutely. We even had one instance where an individual was shown the role profile of what the CEO position was going to look like in the future. And after reading through that profile and understanding what was really required in terms of experience, knowledge, characteristics, and abilities, they decided to self-select out of the process, and they realized that they didn't have the motivation or really the capabilities needed for the role going forward.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually sometimes the best decision that you could offer the organization, mm-hmm. is to give the opportunity to an individual to opt out, because if they opted in and they were really questioning whether or not they wanted the role or were capable of doing the role, it puts the organization at a greater risk.
Now, speaking of risks, are there common mistakes that you think get made during this kind of process that can create some issues maybe down the line?
Absolutely. I think a key component, so this is sort of the counter to the first question, is not having both a short and a long-term plan. So not only, you know, within corporate America, but certainly for REITs, you know, as a successful CEO, it's a cyclical industry, and so you have to think long-term and act in the short-term. And so we would, you know, use that logic with talent management and how you approach succession. So certainly, instead of being hit by a bus, we like to say, what would happen if you won the lottery tomorrow? Do you have someone who, in the interim, or perhaps even for longer term, if you have, you know, line of sight into that, do you have someone who could step in to the role now? And then thinking much longer term and tied to the strategy of the organization. Well, what's needed for the future, and what's the likely timeline and readiness and capabilities of someone who could fit this role much longer term.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of timelines, so what we always encourage our organizations is to think a good 3 to 5 years out. And I think around succession planning, and I think one of the challenges for folks is it's not an immediate need, so it's never like a top priority on the list, right? But it is so critical, right? Mm-hmm. And so what we've seen before is organizations that you can have a really robust succession plan, and then you have your succession event, and you've moved your new CEO into the role, and that individual lasts only about 3 to 6 months, and you have no backup plan for your succession plan. So it's always thinking about, okay, are we actually, we know we've got the right individual, but if for some unforeseen circumstance that doesn't work out, you need to have a backup. Mm-hmm. On top of that, when you're planning this far in advance, you've got 3 to 5 years, right? And you're already hopefully developing some internal successors in your organization. They have a clear understanding that they've got a shot, right? Mm-hmm. But you also need to think a little bit about, well, what happens if that succession event doesn't happen in 3 to 5 years, right? But you've already told these individuals that it might happen along the way. How do you keep them retained and excited and energetic in the organization? And at the same time, when you do make a succession decision, right, from all those other individuals in the talent pool, how do you keep them engaged through that succession event, even though they haven't been identified for it?
Yeah, absolutely. We had a client once that told us that CEO succession is not about your readiness as a CEO, but rather the readiness of your successor. So it's not on your timetable, it's on theirs, and you should be ready to leave when your successor is ready.
Absolutely.
So, what about diversity? What role should diversity play as a factor in succession planning?
Well, first things first, it has to. and we have a firm philosophy here at Ferguson that diversity goes beyond just gender diversity as well. When we talk about diversity, we talk about all sorts of diversity, ethnicity, right? But also diversity of thought and experience. So we take it much farther, mm-hmm. right? But I think what we're seeing now more than ever is this this greater need, right, to create more diverse boards and more diverse executive teams. And we've also, there's a lot of statistics out there that are actually showing that having greater diversity in some of the top teams within these organizations actually also have a material impact on the bottom line. And But I think it's kind of cracking the nut, right? How do we actually bring more diversity into our organization? How do we find more diverse individuals with the experiences that we need to serve as senior team members or a CEO or a board level individual?
Yeah, absolutely. And we like to think, as Dominic mentioned, about diversity as something that's not just surface level, but certainly deep level. And one thing that we find is that it's, you like people who are like you, and you like people who remind you of yourself. You know, your own name is your favorite word in the entire English language, I'm sure. And so it's very easy to see that similarity as a signal for liking, and liking as a signal for effectiveness in a role. And so when we think about diversity, it's not just from those surface level characteristics, it's really diversity in terms of motivations, values, and drivers. And more often than not, we can fall into the unconscious trap of, because of that similarity, because of that likability, selecting people who mirror ourselves in ways that may not be necessarily what the organization needs.
Yeah. We might not necessarily even know we're doing it, but we promote in our likeness. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of comfortable around the people who we feel share similar experiences, or maybe we've shared experiences together where we were successful, and because of that success, we automatically want to give that person an opportunity or promote them. But what happens is, are they right for the types of things that we're promoting them into? That's something that you really need to have a very objective lens around. And so we always say to folks, you know, really kind of capture greater feedback, and kind of get a kind of a universal understanding around what's both in your organization and outside your organization that you might be able to tap into. I will also say that from an engagement standpoint and actually recruiting and retention in your organizations, and especially when you look at the millennial generation, right? We are looking at a generation now who are really hungry for the right type of culture in an organization, and they consistently, time and time again, say that they will bring their skills and experiences to an organization that celebrates diversity. And so it's all about, how are you actually creating an organization through your leadership that demonstrates that we are a diverse brand that you could actually leverage as your employee brand or employee value proposition, essentially.
So what about, you know, talking REIT specifically, is there anything about REITs, or I guess the real estate business in general, that might make succession planning for the CEO position more difficult relative to other industries?
Mm-hmm. I think one big factor is that, within the real estate, and particularly the REIT space, you have a cohort of individuals that, you know, created their companies in the late 80s, early 90s with, you know, the rise of the REIT. And so you have a preponderance of founders that have been in the role for 10 to 11 years. And we know that the average tenure for a CEO in the REIT industry is 10 to 11 years. And so about 40% of them are coming up on the boundary there. And so, when you have a founder, the identity of that person is so very strongly ingrained in the identity of the organization. And likely the founder has brought that organization to a level of success that creates an inflection point, which the organization needs to look very different from what it did when the founder started and ultimately, led its growth. And so that piece is very hard to separate when thinking about what's needed for the future CEO or the future leadership of an organization, is really divorcing the identity of the founder from that role profile that we talked about earlier.
Absolutely. I think there's a couple other things off the back end of that to consider, right? And I think this goes for REITs, but it also goes for other industries as well, is that in your succession process, you have to figure out how you're going to not only onboard your new successor, but you also got to figure out how you're going to offboard your founder, right? Or your leader in that organization who, frankly, and I've worked with some excellent, amazing leaders in my history over 20 years as a leadership consultant, but I'll tell you that, it's a matter of that CEO sitting back and saying, well, what's next? right? What am I going to do with my life, right? Mm-hmm. That's a big question to ask, especially when you're someone who's been in a role 10, 15, 20, 25 years where the organization has relied on your problem-solving and decision-making capability to get through the day sometimes, right?
Yeah.
And so it's also about how do you create a real robust, transformational type of process around offboarding certain leaders in your organization so that you also aren't up against another risk, which we see with some organizations going through succession is when you identify a successor, but then you keep the original leader in the organization, and then there becomes this bit of a power struggle there where you know, really kind of the power still resides with the founder of that organization. And it's a challenge sometimes for that new leader to be able to kind of come in and make the decisions that they need to make. From a REIT perspective, another thing that I think REITs are up against is you have seen really small, simple organizations 20 years ago that have evolved into extremely complex, dynamic organizations that require a whole host of different skills, right? Mm-hmm. And you're actually seeing more and more leaders who need to come in with, you know, that experience around kind of bringing in capital and really kind of being mindful of certain things. But at the same time, they also have to get around the technology risks. Mm-hmm. They're kind of managing all sorts of new things in terms of IT, in terms of human resources. And so when you think about the type of leader that you're looking to carry REITs into the next generation, it's going to be a whole host of different skills and characteristics required than what you might have needed 10, 15, 20 years ago. So that's also something that I think a lot of REITs are up against is, well, what does the leader of the future look like, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. From a founder perspective as well, one of the things that I think founders should probably keep in mind from a statistical perspective is that what we see is that about, you know, 25 to 30% of firms really survive into the second generation. About, you know, 10 to 15% will survive into third, and ultimately you probably might have about 5 to 10% of them that will survive into the fourth generation. And so when we talk to founder-led organizations, one of the things that we always talk to them about is, you know, how are you building your legacy and how are you investing, again, going back to what we originally said, in developing your bench, right? Mm-hmm. We have a little slogan here that while you need optionality in your deals, you also need optionality in your bench. And we think that's actually a pretty good slogan to go by.
Yeah.
Your organizations.
Okay, well, I guess another question from a governance standpoint would be, how much interest do REIT directors or shareholders show in succession planning? How involved do they get?
I would say it's a bit of a mixed bag if you really think on a person-by-person basis. So as a consultant, I'm going to give you the answer of it depends and talk about what I've found out. So I think from a shareholder and investor perspective, it's certainly something that they're paying attention to and increasing it's increasing in their focus. So, you know, we know that EY, we know that RSM, when they do risk assessments, they're looking at CEO succession planning or even executive succession planning as a control that they're looking for, whether or not it's a risk within your organization. So if they're looking at it, shareholders and investors are looking at it. And I think investors and shareholders are just looking for greater transparency. You know, we're in the information age, and with greater information comes greater need for information. And so when you're looking at recommendations for proxy statements or what to include in terms of CEO succession planning or succession planning for senior leaders, I think with more information, there's going to just raise more questions around requirements around that.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we've got a lot of, and it kind of goes back to what Camille said, yeah, you've got a board director who is motivated around succession, and give them the opportunity to really kind of lead up on that succession committee that we talked about earlier, right? I think it's also a matter of really kind of understanding that there are a number of different risks associated with not getting the right successor in place, and that there are some board leaders that I've worked with who will sit down and let's say, Dominic, the number one thing that's important to our organization is succession, right? So I would also argue that the board directors who recognize that also see it as a competitive advantage. If you have a strong, robust succession plan that is both short-term and long-term and driven by your board, you are probably beating out 50% of the competition already on kind of the legacy of your business and not only establishing growth, but also long-term sustainability.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say the very best directors that we've had experience with, they are true partners in this succession process. And it's not just around the decision, it's how do you, as a board member, become involved in the development of the executive team and those below? And so in terms of coaching and mentoring and interaction with the senior team and getting a line of sight into those that may be potential successors, that really lends a lot of confidence in the decision. And then also you know who's coming up through the organization at a much greater level than you would otherwise.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, Camille and Dominic, I really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much for joining us to fill us in on some of the ins and outs of succession planning for REITs.
Thanks. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
And thank you also to our listeners for joining us. For the REIT Report, I'm Alan Kenny.